Good morning. So today we're going to make a little diversion and talk about this thing called bitwise operators, which are things that, notably for the lab and homework this week, you're going to use from C LightCode. I'm going to start with an example of a use case for this, where I have a pointer to a Y86 instruction in machine code. And I'd like to get out the opcode. That's what I mean by that is what our book calls the I code, the top 4 bits of the first byte of the instruction, which tells us basically what category of instruction it is. Is it a NOP? Is it one of the arithmetic logic operations, and so on. So what's an example of a way I could do this? And there's a way that you should all be able to figure out from 2150 without any of the newfangled operators that are in the lab and homework. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying we can use what we're going to find out later is a shift operator to do this. So there's a way of doing this if you didn't know about the shift operators yet. Yeah.
Can you just clear that bit?
Clear what bit?
The zeroth bit.
So you want to say, well, you're trying to clear the things which aren't what we want. That doesn't actually extract them though, because we want, the goal here is to get like 9 if it's a return instruction, not 90.
Oh, so you clear all the other bits by ending it with the other bits that are 1.
So your proposal is to clear the bits which aren't what we want.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a good step, but if we do that for, say, a return instruction, we'll still have 90 and not 9. But there is something we can do to actually get the 9 out of a return instruction. I guess I'm surprised people didn't come up with it. So if you remember, these are numbers. So you can divide by 16. That's in binary, that just gets rid of the last 4 places, just like dividing by 1,000 would get rid of the last 3 in base 10. And division in C just rounds towards 0, so we don't even need to do anything to worry about what about the other bits, what if it's a sub-instruction which has something else set, we don't need to worry about that. The division wound the right way. Okay, so this is standard way of doing it without any of the fancy bitwise operators we learned. And, you know, the reason we might talk about the other operators, one thing is that division, while it certainly works for this, generically division is really slow. So on the Intel Skylake microarchitecture, which is like not too old, and this is similar on more recent Intel microarchitectures, a division of a byte-sized division is about 6 cycles. And if you're doing an 8-byte division, a 64-bit division, it's much worse. Versus the same microarchitecture, if we're doing additions, we can do about 4 of them per cycle. So we can do 4 times more additions than we can do 1-byte divisions. And this is because general division is really easy to, it's really hard to implement. And this seems like kind of a shame here, because this is not general division. This is something special, where conceptually we're just extracting certain bits. Like, and if you think we'll probably have a bunch of wires with each of the bits, and we just want to select a few of the wires, then we should have an easier way of doing this. And the shifting way is how the hardware is exposing that easier way. And since we're going to talk about what hardware works like, I'm going to go over some PIC diagrams we'll be using and sort of the standard way we'll be talking about things. So we'll commonly draw, especially next week and on Thursday, circuits. And we want to talk about wires. And in this class, our wires are going to contain values, bits and things like that. Really, these are represented by a voltage in a real machine. But we'll just say that we have a wire and that the wire has a value on it, and that value is on every part of the wire. And the value propagates from one side of the wire to the other. That really takes some amount of time. We'll basically consider it instantaneous in this class. So that when we put a zero on the wire here, we get a zero on the other side. There's a small delay, but we'll consider it basically instantaneous. And commonly, we don't want to just talk about individual bits, but we're talking about like a value in a register, and we want to move those around and add them. And yes, I could draw, like, pick things like this, something like this, or I could make it a little more compact and draw something like this. So here, you know, I have the value 26, and when we have wires to represent that, we're going to have each bit on a different wire. And I really don't want to write each all the ones and zeros, so I'll commonly do something where I give you a bundle of wires and just write the value that's stored across all of them at once. And even this is going to be way, way too crowded for some diagrams we're going to want to make. Like, usually we're going to actually want to draw like 64-bit values. Do I really want to have 64 lines? We'll be dealing with like three of them at once, like the current program counter and two registers, and the result of adding those two registers, that's four things I would need to fit on one slide. That's just way too crowded. So usually I'll just draw one wire and say it's holding a value like 26. What I really mean is that that one line represents a bundle of wires. Commonly we'll have like 64, the number will vary. In this case, I'm not telling you how many wires there are for that one wire, but I'll just draw it like this, and what I mean is we're doing that. So for today, since we're gonna deal with individual bits for the most part, we're only gonna deal with this last scenario, but this is generally what we mean. We're talking about wires, and we're drawing wires and pictures. So any questions about this concept? Okay, so with that idea about what the diagrams look like, let's say what we're trying to do when we have this extract opcode, like say we have a JL. Conceptually, what we're doing is that we have the first byte on a bunch of wires. Presumably, the computer has to read the instruction from memory. It gets that on a series of wires. And we just are taking some of those wires. Like, this in hardware is basically free. It's not like, shouldn't take multiple cycles. We have, it's, you know, it's basically free. The only question is how hard is it to take those four wires and wire them to something. And we'd like to expose that these sorts of operations are really cheap to software. And so we're going to have to add instructions to do that. And one common thing is that we have some wires that aren't in the right place, and we want to extract those values. So the main instruction for doing this sort of operation is the alluded to shifting right, which you may have seen if you started in the lab early and see. And basically what we're gonna do is we're gonna say we have a value from a register, and that's gonna be whatever the size of the register is. So like in Y86, that would be a 64-bit value. In X86, it's 64 or 32 or 16, depending on whether it's RAX, EAX, and so on. And we're just going to take an amount. In this case, the amount is 4. And we're going to move all the bits over that way. And we're going to store the result in a register. And this allows us to take the 4 bits over and move it to the bottom where we want to actually have the value, which is all we need to do to extract the opcode from a single byte in this case. So we have a bit of a problem, which is that, so we've moved all the bits over. And unlike in hardware, we can't just have less wires to hold our value. We have a register to put the value in. The register has a fixed width, and we have to put something in those bits that we shifted over and don't have left. And there's multiple legitimate choices for this. The choice we're gonna start with is probably the simplest one, which is just that we're gonna add zeros. And in X86, this is accessible via the SHR for shift right instruction. And so that would be a way of implementing in assembly that function to extract the iCode, the top 4 bits, from a value. We read memory to get the byte at the beginning of the instruction, and then we shift it right by 4 to extract the actual top 4 bits. Yes?
Do compilers guarantee that the lower 4 bits are 0 when you shift by 4?
So the question is, do the compilers guarantee that the upper 4 bits?
Upper 4 bits, yeah.
We'll get to that. The shift right instruction will always do that.
Okay.
That's how this instruction works. It always adds in zeros. And as has been alluded to, we have a way of writing in C with this right shift operator. And that right shift operator corresponds directly to the shift operation. And you might say, well, you told me that division was really slow, and this obviously seems like it's simpler than division. Like, at least, you know, we don't have to worry about dividing by 3, which is something division does, and that's really annoying in binary. So maybe compilers can take advantage of this. And the answer is that, well, you can look at it and you can try. So we have our two versions, and so here's an example of how they compile with an optimizing compile. So you can see that these generated slightly different code with my compiler, but in both cases, the compiler said, oh, yeah, that's a shift right. So the compiler has this rule where it knows, oh, you're dividing by a power of 2. I can turn that into a shift. And it does that because it knows that it's equivalent to extracting the top wires, and it knows that that instruction is usually a lot faster. And in general, you can think of right shift as just a form of a form of division by powers of 2, with that rounds down. So, any questions about right shift and what compiler is generating it, and what it means mathematically? Yeah.
Does every architecture guarantee that, like, when you shift over, like, it'll fill in? Fill the gap with zeros?
So the question is, will this code always fill in with zeros?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, with a caveat I will get to in a second. So there's another version of right shift called arithmetic shift. And on x86, this is the SRA instruction. And what it does is, rather than fill in with zeros, it says, I'm going to copy the highest bit. And in a base, the 2's complement number, that's the sign bit. So if you start with a positive number, a positive sign number, this does the exact same thing as the other right shift, which is called a logical right shift. The difference is when we have a negative number, something where the sign bit is 1, we'll copy that sign bit into all the filled in bits. And we'll end up with 1's being filled in from our negative number. But with our positive number, it's exactly the same. So this is just another choice for what do we do with those extra bits. And it's also valid. But you might say, well, this isn't what I would have guessed would be one of the first choices. Why are we doing this? And the answer has to do with how dividing in 2's complement works. So let's say we're dividing a negative number by 2, and we want to do it with bit shifted. So what you could do with our logical shift is you could negate, you start with a negative number, you negate, flip all the bits and add 1 to turn it into its corresponding positive number. Then you do our right shift to divide by 2 once, let's say, and then you flip all the bits and add 1 again. So you can see what we're doing here is we're flipping the bits twice, so that sort of cancels out. And we're right shifting by one and then flipping the bits. So we're flipping our filled in zero bit to a one. So by filling in with zeros, this is the same as that arithmetic right shift for a negative number, because it fills in with a one instead of a zero, except for some rounding issues. The rounding is going to be a little bit different. So that makes sense? And so it turns out that you can use an arithmetic right shift to easily divide signed numbers by powers of two and get the correct result. The compiler might need to do a little extra work, or you, if you're doing it by hand, might need to do a little extra work to deal with the rounding being different than what you want. In particular, the main issue is that it rounds down and not towards zero. But for example, if you write a divide by 16 with a signed number, you'll get code which kind of looks like this sort of optimized code here, but instead does something to deal with the negative case. And that's why my code samples use unsigned char. Okay. And in C, on our machines, if you shift a signed number, it does an arithmetic shift. If you shift an unsigned number, it does a logical shift. That's what our compiler has chosen to do. And this is true on every system I know of, that it always does an arithmetic shift for signed numbers and a logical shift for unsigned numbers. The C standard technically doesn't specify what a signed shift does. It's what is known as implementation defined. This means it's not undefined behavior. Compilers have to choose something to do. But every compiler I've ever heard of, especially on x86, does an arithmetic shift. And for unsigned, it always does a logical shift. It always shifts in zeros. There's another little thing about what the C standard says about shifts, which is another tricky case for undefined behavior. So you saw the case when Samira went over the example where the compiler assumes that signed overflow doesn't happen, and that creates these logical results from optimization. And there's something like that, some gotcha for shifting, which is that if your shift amount is greater than the width of a type, so let's say you have an int and you shift it over by 32, what you'd expect is that, well, we shift everything off so we get all zeros. But the C standard says behavior is undefined. And in practice, you will often get illogical results. And one reason for this is that in x86, the shift instruction ignores the upper bits of the shift amount. So if you shift by 32, it only looks at the bottom 5 bits of the shift amount. It says, oh, that's zero, and it shifts by zero. And the compiler, because it knows that shifting by bigger than the width of the type is undefined, will just generate that shift instruction without checking if your shift amount is too big. And you'll get a weird answer, and only sometimes. Like, you won't get it if the compiler does the shift with 64-bit numbers for some reason, and then converts back to 32-bit. So don't shift by more than the width of the type you're shifting. So any questions about right shift? So we've talked about extracting part I codes from instructions. Let's talk about the other operation, which is that we have an I code and I want to make an instruction from it. And logically, what I do with wires is I have a bundle of wires with the I code, and I just add in a bunch of wires with whatever I want for the function code, which commonly would be zero for all the instructions which don't have multiple variants. And we'd like to expose this operation to hardware, and it's basically the opposite of that shift right, and you might guess based on opposite of shift right that that's gonna be shift left. And in fact, it is. So instead of SHR, we have SHL, and instead of, and you know, because you can't shift by a negative, which is some people's guess, and instead of shifting over by a negative, we shift in with the arrows pointing in the other direction. But otherwise, it works the same as shift left, shift right. Unlike shift right, there's not two versions of this. We just always shift in zeros. This is because there's not some sort of like division where it makes sense to shift in anything other than zeros. And so this is just equivalent to multiplying by a power of 2, just like shifting in the other way is equivalent to dividing by a power of 2. So it's an instruction we have. That should be L. And it's equivalent to multiplying by a power of 2. Yeah.
I've seen SAR before. Does that just mean SRA?
So the question is, what is SAR? SAR? Did I actually write this all wrong? It is possible I didn't correct a typo, and it's actually SAR, not SRA.
Also, does Intel syntax have different names for some instructions?
No. So it's possible I have a typo and I meant SAR every time. And I somehow did not correct that in the slide set. And I made that mistake last semester. I thought I corrected my slides, so surely I didn't need to check. But maybe not. I'll look that up when I'm not in front of you. Okay. So we talked about extracting instructions and extracting our iCode. So let's say instead of reading just one byte, we read the first 2 bytes. I'm reading in little endian order, so we get a 16-bit integer like this, and I'd like to get out the iCodes. Again, in hardware, this is really easy. I just take the 4 wires up out of 16 that are the iCode, but in software, this is maybe a little less intuitive. And the natural way to do this, from the arithmetic point of view, things you should be able to figure out from 2150 is with division and modulus. You know, the same way you can take mod 10 to extract a digit, or mod 100 to extract 2, you can take mod 16 to extract 4 bits. Or mod 256 to extract 8. Unfortunately, modulus is done with the division instruction, so this is the straightforward way of converting this to assembly is not actually efficient. And we'd really like to expose the ability to deal with individual bits of values in a sane way. And the way we're going to typically do this is we're going to expose one of our core hardware components in a certain way. So we have talked about wires, as that's how we have values. And if you did the reading, you know that we have things which take those wires and produce new values on other wires. And the most simple version of those are gates. So here, this is an XOR gate. So it takes in 2 values. And based on those values, produces an output on an output wire. And this is the easiest operation to do in hardware, and we're going to try to expose this as a building block for I want to do things with particular parts of my registers, particular bits of it, to the program. That's going to be our general pattern. And to see, well, what operations do we want to expose, let's start by looking at a truth table for a different gate, which is AND. So AND has this property that if you AND with 1, you keep a bit the same. That ending with a 1 doesn't do anything. And if you AND with 0, you clear a bit. And we're going to use this to be able to select bits from a value. We'll AND with 1 when we want to keep a bit, and 0 when we don't. So the question is, how do we AND individual bits? Well, we're going to construct a register value where in the same positions we care about, we have ones to indicate what bits we want. And where in positions we don't care about, we have zeros to indicate what bits we don't want. And we're going to use an instruction which will do what is called a bitwise AND. It will go bit by bit between 2 values and AND each pair. So this in C is represented with the single ampersand operator as a binary, a two operand operator. And it basically, you can think of it as treating each integer value as an array of bits and anding each pair. So here I'm doing 2 and 4. I have 0 and 0 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, 0 and 0 is 0, and so on. And like I've pointed out with my truth table before, what this is doing is really, it is only keeping this bit from the original because that's what's set in 4. And for example, if I have 2 and 7, 0 and 1 is 0, 1 and 1 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, and so on. And 1 and 0 is 0. And what this is doing is keeping the bottom 3 bits only and getting rid of the rest because that's the only bits that are set in 7. Bottom 3 bits of 10. So does this operation make sense? So in C, I showed you it was the AND percent operator. In assembly, this is the AND instruction, which is one of the instructions you will have to implement in YAD6. And it does that exactly that operation. Takes each bit, ANDs them together. And you know, if you were doing this sort of otherwise in a C program, you'd imagine you'd probably write a loop. But in hardware, this is a really simple thing and a really efficient thing to implement. Because what we do is we have a bundle of wires with the two values, and we just have a bunch of gates, one for each bit typically, and we just wire those all the values to those gates and take out the results. And the amount of time it takes the operation to happen is the time it takes basically to go through one gate because this all happens at the same time in parallel. So this is really efficient to do in hardware. We just have essentially for ending 64-bit values, 64 gates. And we just do it all in the time it takes one gate to act because they all happen in parallel. And so if we take advantage of this, we can extract the opcode from our bigger value by doing that. So one option is we shift over by 4, and then we AND with something where there are only one set in the 4 bits we care about, which in this case, after shifting by 4, that's the bottom 4 bits. Another option is we can AND with something which has only the 4 bits we care about first, and then shift over to move those 4 bits to the bottom of the number. These will both produce the same results. Obviously produce slightly different instructions. So any questions about what I'm doing here? And so produces, the assembly is pretty straightforward. This is what my compiler actually produced for this. Yes?
Can you go over again why we have to AND the last 4 bits after we shift everything?
Why do we have to do that? Because the original value might be something like, one, and we want to extract these. If we just shift over, we'll have this junk on it too. So we're getting rid of the top, which would be, if we got this from our instruction, would be like the register numbers or something like that. Other questions? Okay, so AND, this bitwise AND as it's called, is one of several operators we have. So we also have OR, which has this truth table. So AND you can think of as being a way to conditionally keep or conditionally clear bits. You keep bits by ANDing with a 1 in that position, you clear bits by ANDing with a 0. You can think of OR as a way to conditionally set a bit. You OR a bit with 1 to set it regardless of what the bit was originally. You OR with 0 to not change anything. And you can think of XOR as a way to conditionally flip a bit. You XOR with 1 to flip a bit to the opposite of what it was, and you XOR with 0 to not change anything. And in all cases, the way you're going to use these practically is you're going to say, what bits do I want to change, and which of the types of changes do I want to do? And you're going to construct a number with 1s in the positions where you want to change, or 0s, depending on what the operation is, and use the appropriate bitwise operation. Yes?
Are bitwise operations or instructions faster than like addition and subtraction?
So the question is, are bitwise operations and similar faster than addition and subtraction? So that is a, didn't remove that slide. I guess I did remove that slide. Okay, so the answer is sort of. So on modern processors, add and subtract are as fast as bitwise and an OR typically. This is not because it's actually, you know, physically faster to do add and subtract. It is not. But they have more hardware for doing add and subtract. Because, well, if you don't do add fast, you aren't going to run any programs quickly. So usually the bitwise operators are like as fast as an addition or subtraction. But they're not like actually faster than that, just because additions and subtractions are as fast as any instruction can be on a modern processor. You don't have to build a processor this way, and it might make sense not to, but this is not typically the design point modern microarchitecture designers have come to. They say, I better make, you know, it doesn't really matter if I make instructions faster than add, that's not worth doing. But it is, even though it is like simpler in hardware to do than an add, because like, an add, like, you can do all the add conceptually does like multiple of these. And it's obviously more work because of that. Okay. So we have bitwise OR, where we again take pairs of bits, OR them together. So we OR 10 and 7, you get 15. We have bitwise XOR, where we take the pairs of bits and OR them together. And again, this is conditionally flip bits. So 0 XOR 1 is 1, 1 XOR 1 is 0, and so on. So XORing 10 and 7, we get 13. So on. So these are these bitwise operators we're going to use in the sense of I want to set, flip, OR keep only or clear bits. So I'm going to construct a mask and then mask where only the bits I care about are set, and then use that with one of these operators to do that. We have another operator which is in a different category, and it's mostly helpful for constructing those masks. So this is what I'm going to call complement, which is the bitwise version of bang. It flips all the bits. It just flip bits. So if you take complement of 0, you get something with all 1s as a signed number that's negative 1. If you take complement of 2, you flip all the bits as a signed number that's negative 3, and so on. And this operator is useful most notably for I construct a mask, but I need it to, I know what bits I want, but in fact I need the bits I want to be all zeros, because like I need to clear certain bits. So commonly you'll set those bits to 1 and then take the complement of that to get the thing you want to AND with to clear those bits and keep all the others, because you have 1s when you want to keep bits with AND. So any questions about complement? Okay, so we're going to go through an example of using these, which is akin to what you'll have to do in lab in the homework. It'll help you think about how you can get useful operations out of these bitwise operators. And we're going to start with the ternary operator. And because even though this is part of C and Java, you may not have seen this, I'm going to tell you what this does. So if we have W equals X question mark Y colon z. This is the same as if x, w equals y, otherwise w equals z. This is just another syntax for that. The reason it exists is so you can do the if else in an expression. Some people think this is bad. Some people think this is the handiest thing ever. But it exists in C, and we're going to talk about implementing this not in the straightforward way of doing a branch and compare, but doing this type of operation with bitwise operators. So any questions on this on the ternary operator? Yes?
Does the syntax difference actually make it faster? Do the compilers implement it faster?
So the question is, does the syntax difference make it faster? No. Okay, so let's start with the simplest possible case. So I'm going to do x question mark y colon z, and I'm going to do this under a constraint that x, y, and z are just 0 or 1. That's the only values they have. The reason I'm starting here is that if we want to do this, the whole thing with bitwise operators, well, it helps to think about just doing it a bit, one bit time, and presumably we'll just use things which wrapped in all the bits and it will be the same, maybe. So I've been asked to do this with the bitwise operator, so I'm going to implement it in C without if, else, or the ternary operator. And this conceptually would be how I produce assembly code if I wanted to, for some reason, avoid using jumps. And the way I'm going to start doing this is with divide and conquer. I'm going to first do if x give me y, otherwise give 0. And then I'm going to do if x give me 0, otherwise give me z. And the advantage of doing this is that if I OR these two things together, I get all the bits that are, I get all the bits in common, so I'm going to get exactly what I want. Because remember, ORing with 0 does nothing, so I'm going to either have y ORed with 0, which is y, or 0 ORed with a z, so if I just OR the two expressions I get together, I'll get an answer for the whole expression. And this is a common strategy when you want to figure out how to do something with bitwise operators. You get 0 or the value you want and OR a bunch of those together. Yes?
How do we know that we'll never get y OR with z?
Because it's dependent on the truth of x. Yes, we have to know that that it's mutually exclusive that we don't get y or z. So let's start on our first part. So one helpful thing to do here is let's make a truth table. So if x equals 0, we want 0 always. If x equals 1, we want 0 if y equals 0, and 1 if y equals 1. If you remember our truth tables earlier, this is exactly the truth table for AND. So this operation is exactly x and y. And the other way around is the opposite, so we can just negate x. Let the bits in x, and then do AND. And so we get our final answer by ORing those together, and that's our ternary operator, but only if x, y, and z are 1 or 0. So what does this just, does this work if we get rid of that restriction? And if it doesn't, why? What's an example of why it won't work if we get rid of the restriction that x, y, and z are just only 0 or 1? So what might go wrong? Volunteers. Okay.
You want y to be a result. So if y has a zero value, then you're going to end up storing like a zero. You're going to be handing zero with x, and that'll always evaluate to false. Okay?
So if y is zero, this works fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me go through an example where we have a problem. Let's say our x is 1, our y is 2, and our z is 3. So what we're going to do is we're going to take one bitwise AND with 2 and tilde 1, bitwise AND with 3. Or maybe this is not actually technically not broken. Let's do this z is 0 to make this more obvious. It's still bad. So z is 0. And let's see what goes on here. So we have 1 ended with 2, and that's going to be, we have 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, and we AND. And remember, we do a bit at a time. So 1 ended with 0 is 0, 0 ended with 1 is 0, 0 ended with 0 is 0, and so on. So this is going to evaluate to 0. And given what it represents, that's already a problem. Like, it should be 1, but it's 0. And here, we have tilde 1, which is 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, ended with 0, which is just going to be 0, because all the bits are 0. There. And so our total result is a 0, which is precisely wrong. So this is an example, one example we're messed up. And we can see our problem here is basically that this x here, this is our x, which is our mask, was supposed to select all the bits of y. But we only selected the last bit of y. And we also have a problem with here, which didn't come up yet, but if we say made z into, let's say, 4, we'd have the result of this would be 4, because we do 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, this is x, this is tilde x, ended with 1, 0, with 4, and we get 4. So we have the problem here that this tilde x, we want it to be all zeros, not just have the bottom bit be 0, because we want to select none of the bits of z, not all but the bottom bit. So let's work on fixing that. And so we're going to keep the constraint to keep things simple that x is 0 or 1. But we're going to try to deal with generally sized y's and z's. And what we need to do is we want to get all zeros to end with z when x is true, and all ones to end with y when x is true, and the opposite when x is false. And so we'll do our same thing and talk about the first half. So if x is 1, we want to get all ones. If x is 0, we want to get all zeros. And there is a cute trick here where we're going to take advantage of something which is not conceptually easy in hardware, but it's an operation our hardware definitely provides for us in a quick way, which is that we can do minus x to do this. And the reason that works is that all ones in 2's complement, that's negative 1. And if you take minus 0, that's 0. So in fact, minus x is exactly what we want to use. So we can do minus x ended with y. Now, this doesn't have a nice property that this is a really fast operation in hardware because we're doing an addition. Like, it's not something which might conceptually be easier in hardware than a normal arithmetic, because basically we're doing normal arithmetic. And for the other side, we want the opposite result. So one thing we could do is we could just XOR x with 1. Remember, XOR is a way you flip a bit. We want to flip the bottom bit and do the same negation operation, get minus 1 in the case where x started at 0 and 0 otherwise. And minus 1 is all bits set. So any questions about this? Yeah?
So instead of negating x, you're using XOR to construct a mask.
So instead of, what do you mean negating x?
Like doing x complement you're using XOR1. How come?
I'm using XOR1 to flip X from 0 to 1 and back and forth before I take negate to have all the bits be set the same. Yeah. There are other ways I could have done that, but like I could have done, for example, tilde X anded with 1, and then negated that. Like that's another way. Flip all the bits of X. But oops, I flipped the bits I don't care about, so I need to get rid of all but the last one. But and XORing with one is XORing with something is the easiest way. I only want to flip a particular bit. That's typically the way to do it. And we can put those together and get our a final answer. And now we've done our ternary operation where X is 0 and 1. And this, you know, probably could, you know, at least you could easily make this into assembly, which does not have any jumps. So let's say we want to get rid of even that constraint that X is 0 and 1. How do we do that? So the easiest way of doing this is kind of cheating. But the easiest thing is you can use the bang operator. But the bang operator, you know, that's an operation that looks at all the bits at once. Not simple, but that's the easiest way of doing it. And in assembly, that usually does not compile to conditional, to a jump. Usually it's going to compile to a test and then an instruction which copies the ZF condition code into a register, which is SETI or SETANY. And if we do that, we can get a version which works with any possible X. Any questions about this? All right. And I did have the slide I was looking for earlier. I just can't read my slide outline. So as I said, on a typical processor, these are all about the same amount of time. Just because this is where their priorities are. Because in a typical application, bitwise AND is not going to be an operation you have to do every like 5 instructions, but add is. Okay, so let's go through another example, motivated by what we saw there. So there, I used this trick of using the bang operator to get a 0 or 1 out of something that was possibly 0 or like any other value. Turn that into just 0 or 1. Let's say I want to do that without the bang operator, without having a nice comparison instruction. How can I do that? Yes?
What does the bang operator mean?
The bang operator is logical negation. So it exactly, it takes a value. If it's true, it returns 0. If it's false, it returns 1. Okay. So, and because it works that way, if I use the bang operator twice, it flips something from true to false and back again, logically, but it always returns 0 or 1, so it's a way of turning an integer value into either 0 or 1 based on whether it was initially true or false by doing it twice. But let's say we don't do that, and we want to do this without the actual using the bang operator or with addition or subtraction, because we know that's kind of, you know, that seems like something that should be expensive in the hardware. What would be, you know, something that's more analogous to how we would actually do this operation in hardware? Something that's probably like how the test instruction actually sets the ZF flag. So this is kind of a daunting problem, and a way to start looking at problems like this is to say, let's make it really simple. So if X is 1 bit, we don't have to do anything. So what if x is 2 bits? How would you solve this if x is 2 bits and I want to get 0 if all the bits are 0 and 1 otherwise? Shift by, okay, and then?
If it's 1, it's still 1, then it's 0.
Okay, so you, and or, so you can shift by, so one option is we can shift by 1 bit because we want to shift x by 1 bit, and we can OR that with x. Because OR is, if any of them are 1, the result will be 1, and this will mean that our last bit will be a 1 only if any of them are 1. So we can do this and then AND with 1 to extract the bottom bit only, not keep any of the others. And we can apply that same sort of strategy if, say, x is 4 bits. You can shift over AND and OR. Yeah?
Could you also try to get the number of 1s in the number? Yeah, number of bits toggled, and if that's 1, or if it's positive, then it's positive.
So get the number of bits toggled, how do we do that?
Like the Hamming weight thing where you like iterate through the bits.
Yeah, so you're saying let's iterate through the bits, add them together. That's one of the operations I don't want to do.
Okay.
I don't want to add numbers, and I don't want loops. Don't want any conditional jumps, yeah.
We put the bit that we're interested all the way to the left, arithmetic shift that all the way back to the right so it fills up ones or zeros.
So you want to fill up all the bits the same by arithmetic shifting?
Yeah.
So we could do something like that. Shifting it over to the side and ordering it together is basically the same. The issue is that the arithmetic shift will only copy 1 bit at a time, so it's not any more efficient. But that is something you can do, yes. So I have this example code, and we're going to make this a little more efficient. So first thing to note is that if we AND with something that sets all the other bits that aren't being ANDed with to 0, and so when we OR them together, we still have 0, so it's the same as ORing and then ANDing at the end. So I have here, for clarity, I'm saying shift over, extract each bit one at a time, and OR them together. That's what my code says, extract the bottom bit, extract the second bit, the third bit, and fourth bit, and OR them all together. And I can simplify this using this property that I'm ANDing with 1 each time because I'm extracting 1 bit. And I can just do that at the end. Yes, I'm computing a whole bunch of other bits, but I do that anyways. They're just 0 in the original case, and I don't care about setting them to 0 at the end. So that simplifies that a bit. But this is still kind of pretty inefficient. If we're doing this on a 32-bit number, we're going to end up with some massive expression that seems real unwieldy. And we can actually do better than this. And the way I'm going to show that is by pointing out where we're seem to be wasting work. So we have our 4-bit thing, and each of these OR operators we're doing, because we conceptually have a 4-bit value, we're doing 4 OR operations. And we're discarding 3 of them. And wouldn't it really be nice if we could not do that? If we could somehow take advantage of the fact that we are doing 4 bitwise OR operations and like use some other anything other than the bottom one. So any ideas on what we should think about here? So let's think about what our first step did. So I'm just what I'm doing already, without reorganizing anything, what I'm computing is I'm taking x1 ORed with 0, x2 ORed with x1, x3 ORed with x2, x4 ORed with x3. And what I'm going to want to do is I'm going to say, okay, so right now, all I'm using this to compute is this x4 or with x3. But eventually, I'm going to want to compute this x2 or with x1 or something like it. And that's a useful thing to have because that's two of the bits taken care of. And I'd like to take advantage of that. And I'm just computing that for free. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, let's call this number y. And we're going to shift y over by 2 to align these two bits. So now we have, this is y2 and y4 here. Now they're in the same place. So when we do the OR operation next, we OR them together. We also compute a whole bunch of other values that we're unfortunately not going to have much use for. So now if I look at this z4, the last bit of my result, that is in fact x2 ORed with x1, all ORed with x4 or with x3. OR is commutative and associative, so this is exactly the same as x4 ORed with x3, ORed with x2 ORed with x1. The order we do the ORing doesn't matter. And so that means we can write our any of something like this. And so by doing this, I got rid of one OR operation. I'm still doing a whole lot of OR operations where, you know, I'm not using all my results, but at least this is a bit better. So any questions on why this works, how you would supposed to come up with it, that sort of thing? Yeah.
Just to clarify, the original shift by one and then ORing, why do we do that for part bits?
Why do we do that? That's to get this value y here, where I have part of it is the top two bits OR together, part of it is the bottom two bits OR together.
Okay.
So there are other ways of writing this where I shift by a different amount initially and a different amount the second time, which are equivalent. I'm just showing it one way of doing this. Yes?
Why
am I ending it with one at the end? So the value that this value here that I'm ending with one are these bits. And if I look, for example, at that bit, that might be one. It might not be. And my specification earlier was that I was going to get turn 0 into 0 and not 0 into 1. If I didn't end with 1, I might get some value which is not 1. Other questions? So this is part of a general pattern you commonly see when people really make good use of bitwise operators, which is that you want to take advantage of parallelism. When you do bitwise OR, bitwise AND, it's doing, you know, if you have 64-bit numbers, it's doing 64 operations all at once. And a way that these are really powerful is that, well, if you can actually take advantage of all those 64 operations, this is going to be a lot better than if you write, you know, the naive C code, which loops over 64 values. That's often very hard to do, but, you know, it's something you want to take advantage of. And there's this common pattern, which we're doing here, where we take pairs of things and put them together. We do what we might call a reduction, where we have something like a binary tree of values. It's kind of a way you can look at this, is that we have x1, x2, x3, x4, and we're ORing the two pairs together, and then ORing each pair to do that. That's a common pattern you'll do in these sorts of things when you want to do something with all the bits or something like that. And it's also suggest how we can extend this technique to a bigger number. So here I'm doing is any bit set in 4 bits? We can apply the same principle to say, is any bit set in 32 bits? And what I'm doing here is I'm producing this tree where at each step, I'm ORing pairs of values and pairs of values together. And the first step, they're separated by one bit in the number. Then the things that the pairs of bits I OR together are now separated by 2 bits, then 4 bits, and so on. And that's why I'm doing 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. You could write out what the bits are to figure that out. It wasn't, you know, intuitive to you, which is quite understandable that it wouldn't be. Yeah.
If you didn't AND it with 1 at the end, wouldn't you get the highest bit for bit of x?
The question is, if I didn't AND with 1 at the end, what?
You get, like, would you get like the highest order bit, like the place of the highest bit in x of passed in?
What do you mean the highest? I don't understand what you...
Like the place of it in the binary.
So you say, if I didn't land one, does the result tell me about what the highest bit that was set was?
Yeah.
I think incidentally it does, that all the other bits will be set.
Yeah.
That's not actually an easy thing to extract. Well, it's not a super trivial thing to extract what the highest bit set is. It is where you would start if you needed to do that for some reason, because you add one to it and you get the next bit set, and then you shift over by one. So you could use it for that, but it's not what we're trying to do here. Okay. But the same pattern is useful for, I want to figure out what the highest or smallest is. You end up doing things like this, but you all tend to care about the other bits in the process. Yeah?
Is all of this done by the compiler, or do we actually worry about this when we're writing something?
So the question is all this done by the compiler? So if you write exclamation point x, the compiler is not going to do this, because this is not actually the most efficient way of doing this operation on a x86 machine. The most efficient way of doing it is going to be test the value and then set e al, something like that.
If we write a ternary, will it
do that? Probably not, just because usually conditional jumps are faster. It might decide to, in some cases, do bitwise operators, but usually it will do a jump because it's usually faster. The main reason we're talking about this is that what we're doing here, in addition to helping you understand what these operators do, which is one of the reasons we have the assignment, it should help you actually understand what's happening in the hardware, because this strategy we're using here is probably basically what the test operator is doing in the hardware. Probably to figure out if we have a zero, we in fact take our bunches of bits and have this sort of structure where we have OR gates at each of the nodes. That is the most common type of way to build this in hardware, something like that. Because that's, in fact, how you do it in hardware. The other reason, besides knowing the operators, the sort of out-of-this-course reason, is that people on interviews like asking questions about bitwise operators way more than they should. And some of our students find it helpful to know it for that reason. They definitely shouldn't be, because you can, in fact, learn how to do things with bitwise operators, even though the people giving the interview questions seem to think, gosh, if you can do that, you're really clever. No, there's strategies that actually do this consistently, which is what I'll get to next. So on the homework, we have a bunch of problems, kind of like the any bit sort of problems, where we'll say, we want you to do this operation. Here are the operators you can use. You should pay attention to what we're allowing you to use, because sometimes we'll allow you to use bang. And gosh, using bang is sure a lot easier than writing this. General things you should think about. If you want to get out a few bits, which is the most common thing you'll have to do in real code. In real code, it's pretty common that you'll get some big number and you'll care about a few bits of it, like you're parsing machine code. That's something you might have to do. Or you're parsing something which is sent over the network and nice and compactly. And the thing you need to remember is you want to mask. So you produce a number where the bits you care about are set to 1 or 0, depending on what you're trying to do with them. And you do that operation, and you shift the values over to get them to the bottom of the number you care about, or move them to the part of the number you want them to end up in. And that's usually the first step you'll do is you mask with AND to extract the parts of the number you care about and move them to where they need to end up being. Later on, you can worry about things like what we showed with the OR example of, am I ANDing with the same value multiple times or can I move that? But as a good first step, just map and then shift and worry about optimizing later. And doing this sort of optimization where you take advantage of distributive property of the bitwise operators as a second step. As we saw with our ternary operator, something to remember is to divide and conquer. So with the ternary operator, I didn't say, I'm going to do this whole thing at once. I said, I'm going to turn one of those values into zero and OR them together. And that sort of thing is a very common strategy. Produce the result you want OR zero, and a different result you'd want OR zero, and another result you want OR zero, and then OR them all together at the end. Usually it's easier to solve those subproblems that way, and certainly at least easier to think about them. Another thing you can think about is you can do common sub-expression elimination. So something a lot of people miss about the lab and the homework is we allow multiple statements. I put it in bold this time, so maybe less people will miss it. Sure, it's possible to do the assignment without multiple statements under the operations limit, but not advisable. So what you do, so if you hear, we can like put exclamation point x into a variable and negate it. And you'll commonly have common expressions and some big bitwise thing you're doing that be helpful to put into a variable and use in multiple places. Okay, any questions about any of these strategies? Okay, so with that, here's a little exercise. So which of these swaps the last and second to last bits in X? Which is an unsigned int, so you don't have, so it's all logical shifts. There's no arithmetic shifts here. So figure it out. I recommend paper, but you can do what you want. Talk with your neighbor and figure out which ones of these you think are correct. Do what I describe versus something else.
Zero value you get
will
be zero, right?
Like
if it's shifted by right, you get zero.
What?
Yes.
You, all the other bits are, yeah, you can treat as zero.
Thank you.
Right, if you think that's happening.
Okay. Yeah.
Value survives.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. You usually want it to be like a zero in this game.
Okay. Does anyone have opinions about any of these they'd like to share? Or... Yeah.
I think C does work.
Okay. You think C does work? So let's go through C then. So C, what's happening here? So this first part here, x and with tilde 3, 3 has the bottom, is the bottom two bit set, tilde 3 is everything but the bottom two bit set, so this clears all but the bottom two bits. The second part here is x ended with 1, so that gets the bottom bit and shifted over by 1. So that puts the bottom bit in the second position, and everything else is zeros. Here, we shift x over by 1, so we shift it over by 1, a, b, c, d, e, if we start with a, b, c, d, e, f, with leading 0, and we end with 1. So that puts the second to last bit in the bottom position. We OR these all together. We just look down, 0 OR with 0 is 0, OR with e is e, 0 OR with f is f, f OR with 0 is e, and so on. And we get B, C, D, E, or sorry, we get.
The first line is exactly.
Oh. There's no shift there. I just can't write my notes. Okay. A, B, C, D, 0, 0. We get D ORed with 0, ORed with 0 is D, and we get the right result. I just added a shift that wasn't written. Okay. And it turns out all the others don't work. So A, for example, we take A, B, C, D, F, shift it over by one, get E in the last position, looks like a good start. Then we take the value and get everything but the last position, or it together, we get a copy of the second to last bit. Still there. B, we get the E into the last position, we shift over by one in the other direction, so we end up with something with B, C, D, E, which we're ORing, so you know what's wrong there. And our last thing is we're ORing with A, B, C, D, so we get something weird. And in the last case, we have this problem that the last operation I'm doing is XORing with X, so we know that can't make any sense. Unless we somehow got the negation of the two bits lined up correctly, which there's, if you work out what's happening, we're just extracting the bits like we should be, but XORing instead of ORing with X with the two bits masked out. And I guess a note on the assignment, you can do things like this. I recommend it. It doesn't have to be in one line.